Hello and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. And before we start, we've just got a lovely new face on our panel with us, and the new editor of Business Day, Lukhanyo Mnyanda. Welcome, Luke, and an old friend of Business Day too, but you've been away for a long time. Where have you been? You've come from Scotland, right?
Thank you, Peter. It's nice to be back after all these years. I mean, I was here many years back. I've been in the UK about 11 years until yesterday.
Yeah.
Sorry, until last Tuesday, so almost yesterday.
Fantastic.
So I was going
but have you had a good time with Bloomberg's abroad, and has it taught you lots of things?
No, it's just amazing, broadening experience. I mean, I've covered the debt crisis, the Brexit, Scottish independence vote. So it's been quite a broad way. So I've been able to look at a lot of the South African issues.
Well, welcome home. And we'll talk a little bit about Brexit later on in the show, because you have fresh news, or you'll have a fresh views and perspective from Scotland, which didn't want to leave the European Union, just like Northern Ireland doesn't want to leave it. But we're going to start today again with North West Province, which is still sort of at the heart of our political problems at the moment. Of course, that moves around a little bit. And Natasha Mariam is here just to sort of help us settle us where we are, Natasha. The Premier is still in place. There is still sporadic violence in the province. What is the president doing about it, and is any of this, is any intervention working?
Yes, Peter. Well, quite a big intervention was made last week when the provincial health department, as well as you know, in a very technical sort of way, the provincial treasury was placed under administration. So that was quite a big step. Mm. There's also a massive core of government ministers who have descended on the province this week to assess the situation in the rest of the government departments. What we're likely to see is further departments placed under administration as you know, as the ministers go in and actually conclude their fact-finding mission. But today is a really important day because the NWC is sitting in Cape Town, and Supra is on the top of the agenda.
And what can the NWC do, I mean, other than make recommendations to the NEC?
Yeah, effectively, that's all it can do.
Yeah.
The last NEC meeting chastised the NWC for taking a decision, a concrete decision, on the appointment of premiers for two provinces, Mpumalanga and the Free State.
Yeah.
So the NWC's hands are tied, but what they could come out with is a potential special National Executive Committee meeting, or just to discuss the matter at the regular NEC meeting taking place at the end of May, which will then prolong the Supra matter.
And does Supra Mahamapelo have much of a political future at this stage, or would he, you know, need to be looking around for other forms of income, or doesn't he need any income for a while?
My understanding is that there could potentially be a deal on the table for Supra, that if he leaves, he could be appointed potentially as a deputy minister. These are some of the discussions, and these are some of the ideas being bandied about, but his political career as Premier of the Northwest is effectively at an end.
By the time the National Treasury takes over your ability to sign checks,
exactly,
you're done, right?
Exactly.
And Ray, I mean, to what extent is this a test for Cyril Ramaphosa? You wrote the book literally on the guy before his ascension to the leadership of the ANC. To what extent is this a test for him, and how well is he doing?
You see, I think there's a major problem for Ramaphosa in that how does he demonstrate to ordinary South Africans, ordinary people on the streets, that life is different now to what it was under Jacob Zuma? Because he has an administration which is failing. You know, it's failing to deliver services at municipal level, local government level. You know, at the top end of the administration, it's highly functional, and it's more functional now than it was under Zuma. The Treasury, you've got public enterprises under Gordhan fixing up. You're taking Supra's procurement policy away from him, and you're placing the finances there under administration. So at that top level, there is a lot of stuff happening and a lot of change. New Eskom board. But for somebody who, you know, lived in a shack in December last year, life is no different, except that VAT's gone up 1%.
Yeah. So, and the fuel prices at a record.
Yeah, high. You know, so it's very hard, I think, for him to demonstrate that there's real change to the people who count, the people who are going to queue up or not queue up or stay away at the election next year. And I think that's a big crisis for Ramaphosa, and it could explain why he's reaching into these sort of populist things, you know, and trying to team up with Julius and go for land expropriation, go for these quick populist fixes to try and make it look like life is improving. But in reality, the country's on fire. I mean, there are mass protests like never before over service delivery.
Sukhanati, if you were living in a shack before Cyril was president of the country, 3 months later, what would you have expected to happen in your life?
Well, that is wishful thinking to think what has been broken for as long as it has can be fixed in 3 months.
Sure, I'm just saying.
Now, the starting point is there's a lot of thieving and corruption that has been happening, particularly over the past decade. And the Northwest, the past 4 years since Supra became the premier, has been the headquarters of the crimes. Nothing has happened in terms of law enforcement. Mm. Nothing, totally, absolutely nothing. And that is where you need to see change first. The thief that everybody knows needs to be dealt with. And nothing has happened. That is where we are losing it as a country. And literally, as Ray said, the country is up in flames, it's burning. You've seen trucks burning up all over Moy River on the entry.
Yeah, no,
the Northwest. I was there driving through the fires trying to find my way 2 weeks ago. Nothing is happening in terms of change. What should happen? Should have happened 20 years ago, 15 years ago. The services need to be coming to the people, and you needing to be freeing up the potential of the people by making it as easy as possible to invest,
yeah,
as easy as possible to start your own businesses, and that is not happening. But again, that's not going to be fixed.
And instead of Supra Mahomapelo and his fellow conspirators or thieves in the Northwest Province going to jail, Natasha here is telling us that he might be made a deputy minister.
What's wrong with Ramaphosa? You make the man a deputy minister instead of an ambassador. Jacob Zuma made them ambassadors, all the thieves that he removed.
So Cyril's style will be to keep them in his cabinet.
Yeah, Cyril wants them inside here next to him. but the poetic justice about the Supra Mahomapelo issue, you pointed out last week, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma is being made to investigate her biggest supporter.
Yeah.
And now there's no better way of breaking up that Zuma cartel within the ANC than saying, listen, those are your supporters, but I want the result, I want the outcome, and I want it now. Go check what they have done and bring the outcome, and we prosecute them.
Lukanya, does any of this, after you've been away for so long, sound familiar?
I mean, There's a lot of debate as well, you know, change of administration. Oh, how has life changed for the ordinary person? I remember we were having these debates even like 94. You know?
Yeah.
When they'd be saying, like, maybe somebody who doesn't come from a township, like I came from a township, like not actually being able to go to where I wanted without having to sit in the back of the bus.
Sure.
Even life might not be materially different.
Yeah.
That actually, that people sometimes underestimate it. That's sort of like it boosted dignity.
Yeah, but
that's 27, 8 years ago. Yeah, so. Yeah. But even with that in mind, I mean, I don't know how much you can expect to change in 2 or 3 months. I don't know if people
But do you think South African, but looking at what you know having come back, I mean, is it unreasonable for people to expect quick change? I mean, looking at the politics that you've seen in the UK or Scotland or wherever, people are more or less the same everywhere, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, and also to think about how difficult, I mean, the challenges they have there in a very developed country, in a very rich country, one of the richest in the world. And but you look at the levels of child poverty there, you look about, it sort of just for me emphasizes how big this job is to do it in a much, much poorer country, in much less favorable conditions globally. Like,
I was interested. One of the many things that is now being thrown around, like ideas to fix the country, and I've heard this now from Tito Mboweni on Twitter, and I think the EFF are also tweeting about it, is to start a state bank and a sovereign wealth fund. I mean, Sukhanati, is there anything Is there anything that a sovereign wealth fund could do for us? I mean, a sovereign wealth fund, as I understand it, invests offshore. It invests sort of super profits made by some commodity or other. We would used to have, you know, we've manganese, let's say, now is doing quite well, apparently. So you invest offshore, you invest in BP, other people's companies and other people's countries, so that those you can then draw dividends over the years for those profits for your future generations. These people are not talking about future generations, I presume, here. They're talking about now.
They're talking about now, and they're not talking about planting. They're talking about harvesting.
Yeah.
Somehow in their minds, the latter, that's where you start.
Yeah.
Be that as it may, the Economic Freedom Fighters is presenting a bill in Parliament which calls for the establishment of a state bank. They are saying absolutely nothing about the 5 or 6 state banks we already have, post office, the IDC. Indeed, we do have the Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is the PIC. We've got the Land Bank. We've got Itala Banks. No one seems to think these are the state banks. Let us fix what is wrong with them. They just, because they are politicians, they want to claim that we started a bank.
Mm.
Duplicating exactly what we have had over the past 400 years and failing.
What would it, just assume that they do start a state bank, right? It's called the State Bank of South Africa. It would have to borrow money at the same rate as everyone else, but it would have to lend it out a lot more cheaply, I presume, right? So its margins would be tighter. It would have to pay its people a little
better,
or worse, and certainly its executives would have to be very parsimonious in their salary demands. I mean, would it have any chance of?
I asked Tito Mboweni last week. Excuse me, sir. How will that bank work? Will it give money to black people for free? What is it that it will do that the other banks can't do? Because exactly as you have said, it will be operating in exactly the same market. The complaint by people who say they want state banks, they are saying the commercial banks, in which, by the way, the state has got the biggest share through the PIC. They are saying these banks are not willing to lend to black people. Now, please show me a business person that goes into business and turns away the largest lot of customers.
Natasha, this stuff you must hear it a lot from the EFF and from the political parties. I mean, are these just ideas being thrown around in the hope that one of them sort of catches on and finds a place with, you know, that now that Zoom is gone, we all were looking for something new to hang our hat on?
It's, you know, the State Bank is part of ANC policy for, I think, the last two decades. Mm-hmm. It's always been ANC policy. It's the failure of the ANC to implement it, and to implement it effectively. For example, Postbank was the sort of poster child for a state bank. What I'm not hearing anymore, which would be more practical, is to look at is actually a campaign spearheaded by Pravin Gordhan in his first term as finance minister about looking at the regulatory environment around banks, you know, reforming the banking sector and making it more accessible for ordinary South Africans, because that whatever state bank comes onto the playing field will still be governed by the legislation the other banks are governed by. I will still report to the Reserve Bank.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a tend toward the populist, which the EFF has brought onto our political scene quite vociferously.
Yeah.
And it's the ANC then pandering to that, as it has on the land debate.
We'll be back with more populist television in just a moment. Welcome back. The Financial Mail this week, which I'm just going to hold up without, if you can see that, has done a really, really good job on the Steinhoff story. And the story was written by its esteemed editor, who's now sitting next to me, Rob Rose. And Rob, basically the story of Steinhoff so far is that the damage that we assumed had happened when we first heard about it, when early December, it all seems years ago now, is much worse almost by the day, right? The hole was 6 billion euros, it was assumed. And every year, every day, they're finding out some new ghost transaction which digs the hole even deeper. And you've written about the sort of the chairmanship or the role handed to this young woman, Heather Son, whose father, Franklin Son, was once, I think, ambassador for South Africa to the U.S. And what is her job now? Does she have to save Steinhoff, or does she simply have to find out what's going on?
Well, I think, Peter, I think those two issues are related. I mean, she has to know quite how bad the damage is to be able to fix it. She's done quite a good job. I was at the AGM in Amsterdam 2 weeks ago, or last week, and she was tackled by a lot of shareholders. It went on for 3.5 hours, and she did quite an impressive job. It was alarming to see the extent of shareholders who arrived there to pose questions and tackle management and what they've done. And at some stage, the mood shifted in the AGM, and they realised, actually, you know, Steinhoff's in a lot more trouble than we thought. There was almost a degree of sympathy for the guys who
were
there.
Were there managers there? Was there management there? Or was it
Heather's son was there, the CEO was there.
But she wasn't in management, she was on the board,
No, she was on the board, but Dani van der Merwe was there, this acting CEO, who was one of Marcus Huster's good friends, and Marcus is the guy who we believe orchestrated this mess at the moment. So, yes, I mean, it's far deeper than we thought, $6 billion initially. Now there's going to have to be more billions written off, I think, in dodgy
that's in euros, right?
In euros, yeah.
And what I still don't understand, and you've got a great example here when you talked to G.T. Ferreira, but we'll come back to this, is how Marcus Huster, who I presume is in South Africa.
As far as we know, I think he's last
in fact, he's safer here than he is in Germany, presumably, because
he's probably heading to Australia, like all our crooks.
Oh God! You see now, you completely made me lose my train of thought because I thought of a joke about Australians and criminals. But never mind. We all know that one. Yeah.
The point I want to make is that even clever people like G.T. Ferreira, like indeed Christo Wiese.
Well, Christo Wiese is now claiming 59 billion rand back from this thing. Now is that? It's just a tactical thing because he wants to control the process, or is he now going to be the biggest creditor? How does this kind of work? I mean,
my impression is that he wants a seat at the table when the restructuring is debated.
Yeah.
So they have to decide what to sell, what to keep at Steinhoff, and if it's if it's able to kind of present a new vision for what it can be in the future. And Christo Wiese, if he hadn't lodged a claim, might have been left out of the process by saying, "You guys owe me 59 billion." He gets a seat at the table. But his claim is very strange because he's saying essentially he was duped into investing in 2014.
He was duped into?
Yeah, essentially he didn't know that there was all this fraud going on, so he wouldn't have done the deal otherwise. Now, you know, Christo Wiese was the chairman of Steinhoff. So you have to say if Christo Wiese as the chairman was duped, imagine how shareholders feel about this.
Well, is it a case that you know, we all know about South African boards and how many people sit on how many boards. People are simply just too laid back about them, and they assume that the accountants know what's going on, and all accountants, of course, are honest and expert. Is there an arrogance? Not an arrogance, not the right word. Is there a laxness about the way South African boards oversee the companies that they're supposed to oversee?
I think that's one element of it, and I think that's a strong point to be made. Heather Son's point and Christo Wiese's point too is that ultimately you're a chairman of a board. To some extent, you have to trust management for at least the last mile. The question is whether they should have done more to assess what was going on in Europe. But the way it was constructed, it was very smart. Marcus Huster allegedly and his friends constructed a very smart Schlenter, the word that Ray likes so much, to fiddle the cash, fiddle the balance sheet, so it didn't look like a fraud was taking place.
Yeah. The note about G.T. Ferreira was particularly poignant, I thought, because he was invested in PSG, right? And he had invested he'd started a fund for the workers on his wine farm, and and he was persuaded to swap his shares in PSG to Steinhoff. And at the time that he was persuaded to do this, the shares in the trust fund for the workers, and this is extraordinary, I mean, were worth 787 million rand, and they're now worth 18 million rand. That's the level of loss of capital. Do you think, Ray, that the Steinhoff thing, I wonder whether anyone's bothered to measure it, because it's made people like Chris Avisa and all of that, a lot poorer, whether it's had any effect on the Gini coefficient in South Africa, that, you know, on inequality in the sense that it's actually made the rich less rich.
No,
something that size surely would have it, would show up.
That's a very difficult question to answer.
I know. I'm not going to ask you to calculate the thing.
I'm disinclined to go with the view that, you know, they were too busy and didn't pay attention and all that kind of thing. I think they're sitting around the board here. There's things gushing money. Let's not go and mess it up, guys. Let's let it carry on gushing money.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, and I mean, what this exposes, really, I think, is just the lack of application of fiduciary duty by people on boards in South Africa. And I'm quite sure it's a lot more widespread.
But there's a lack of application by people in all of their duties. We're shot through with it in South Africa, be it on boards of private companies, be it in government ministries, be it in provincial. Is there a South African condition? Is it too hot here? I mean, is it the weather or what? Sikonathi, you're looking at me as if you know.
No, I wish I did. I'll tell you this.
Why are we so slack?
On the Steinhoff matter, Christo Visi has a lot to explain. Of course, he's the biggest loser in all of this.
Yeah.
And you have to respect the man, by the way. Losing 100 billion rand, which the Kupias have been trying to steal for 10 years, losing it in 2 weeks and still be the richest man in the country.
Yeah.
You have to respect the man.
Yeah.
But his claim, I submit that it is disingenuous on many levels. He was chairman of Steinhoff, Marcus Yuste reporting directly to him.
Mm.
He was chairman of Pepco at the time he invested. So Christo Visi was buying from Christo Visi.
Yeah.
Christo Visi is suing who now?
Mm.
Everybody who bought shares on the back of that deal that Christo Visi sat on both sides of should then be suing Christo Visi.
Just remind us, Pepco bought...
Pepco, Steinhoff bought Pepco.
Okay, got it.
Yep. Steinhoff bought Pepco.
Yeah.
And before that, Christo Visi. And before that, Christo Visi swapped his shares out of PSG as well, just like GT Ferreira did, into Steinhoff. But let's limit ourselves to the 59 billion rand claim. Let's limit ourselves to the 59 billion rand claim. That's the 59 billion rand in which Pepco was injected into Steinhoff.
Okay.
By Christo Visi into Christo Visi.
Yes.
Who is he suing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I have no further questions because I just don't know enough about it. But what you also were telling us before the show is apparently Eskom is going to give us tomorrow its kind of state of the system report. How often does it do this? What is in this report?
It does it at least twice a year.
Yeah.
So basically they tell us, look, we are going into winter. This is how our infrastructure looks, and this is on average how much electricity we will need, and this is how much coal we have, our nuclear power station, this is the service element. Now, the most interesting part about that is that this time round, 7 power stations, coal generating power stations, have got not enough coal. That's because our favorite, our patriots, the Guptas, have failed to deliver coal since November.
Yeah.
And someone inside Eskom, and that person is now suspended, decided, and because the person really played a very big role in selling the company to the Guptas, decided if these guys can't deliver, I'll divert coal from 6 other power stations to this. Now all 7 stations are short of coal. They've got about 10 days of coal.
Yeah.
Because, again, the person who tricked Eskom into selling, into buying or dealing a business with the Guptas and got paid for it, presumably, now has compromised 7 other power stations. Are we going to have load shedding or are we not? We probably are not going to have load shedding, but we are in serious trouble.
We're going to get close. And very lastly, the government is apparently going to ban all smoking everywhere. Where will you be able to smoke after the... You've written a very fine editorial. I don't know who wrote the editorial, the editor or the deputy editor. But you're actually coming out against any more restrictions on smoking. I know neither of you smoke. What is this? Is this a philosophical position you're taking?
It's about individual liberties.
Yeah.
I definitely cannot smoke inside this building.
No.
But surely I can smoke outside. And I've paid for it. Now, smokers are amongst the biggest taxpayers in this country. The sin taxes that you see year in, year out, they don't hit the tobacco companies, they hit the smokers. Mm. They've already been, they are facing severe limitations already as it is in where do they smoke. You can't even smoke in your own car, probably, but now they are going a step further.
You can if you just hang an arm outside.
Yeah.
Like
now the government is, by targeting smokers themselves, saying you cannot smoke even in the public spaces. It's actually doing what it did and failed dismally with the e-tolls. When they said, you get into your car, you pay us.
Yeah.
Now you put a cigarette in your mouth, you pay us. Who is the victim in this crime? Mm. It's the perpetrator.
Well, the irony is you're going to have the Secunda, Sasol Secunda plant with its wonderful plumes of smoke.
Yeah.
But you won't be permitted to smoke.
But you won't be permitted to make your own plume of smoke.
So how strong, how big is the health, public health argument here? Is it because you don't have an NHS here, so you don't have to worry about how much the state spends on the people who smokers who get sick?
You'll find that in some parts of the country there are no more facilities to treat cancer patients. So KwaZulu-Natal has no cancer facilities available for the public any longer. So if you are smoking and you happen to get lung cancer, they can't help you in KwaZulu. And I think the same has now happened in the Free State as well.
There
are no cancer specialists left working in the state.
And the money that's being levied, the tax that's being levied on tobacco smokers, which should be then used to develop proper healthcare facilities to look after them,
yeah,
is being squandered and stolen. Hence, yeah, we have pictures of some people behind us here.
Yeah.
This is the biggest tax base. If you are happy to pay more tax to kill yourself, please go right ahead. Let's give you all the space outside.
Do you think, Ray, it seems to me to sound like a silly idea, but this is something presumably that the health minister has come up with, and he needs to Cyril will give him his head and let him go ahead with it.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure if he's going to.
Yeah.
You know, it has made a big difference. The clampdown, yeah, on.
And that was in KwaZulu's clampdown,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, it has changed the public health
definitely
picture, and
yeah,
definitely relieved, yeah, government of some spending.
Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you again hopefully next week. Bye-bye.